The TNT Shop has great gift ideas for your furry family member at TNTRadio.live. Charlie Robinson on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Charlie Robinson. Thanks for hanging out with me. Whenever I want to talk geopolitics, when I want to talk about the military, when I want to talk about where we're actually going, there's a few people I can reach out to. But Tony Ardburn is the guy. Served as a U.S. Army Ranger, Kosovo, Afghanistan, Iraq, while reading Bill Cooper books, I might add, knowing what's going on, serving the country while understanding the details. He's the host of the co-host of America Unplugged and Paratruther podcast. And when David Knight goes out of town, guess who his fill-in host is? It's the great Tony Ardburn. Tony, welcome to the show. How are you, buddy?
I'm doing great, Charlie. Thanks for having me. That's a very, very kind introduction. You know, when you put it that way, I sound like a walking contradiction. I might need to work on my multiple personalities. If you're also reading Bill Cooper or reading conspiracy and you're inside of a conspiracy, I don't know, maybe time for self-reflection, but I was in my early 20s. So.
Oh, it's fantastic. Well, I mean, listen, I think that's important though, because you understand how real this can get. You understand how these decisions, you know, I mean, for someone like me, you know, I read it online or I see the news or what, you know, it's very sanitized, the concept of war, the idea that, well, you know, this country said this and now we have to go in there and spread democracy. And you go, okay, well, what does that mean? Well, it means deploying hundreds of thousands of people. It means displacing millions more. It means maybe dropping depleted uranium on Fallujah and creating multi-generational birth defects. I mean, it is ugly. And so I appreciate and have always appreciated your perspective on this, because you're somebody that was on the ground there. And so we get into this situation now where the talk is, well, we've got Vladimir Putin and Xi Jinping talking about how there's an opportunity for them that hasn't come their way in 100 years. And I read that and I go, oh, this doesn't sound good. And then I think about the conversations you and I have had about the fourth turning and how, you know, we're kind of on that schedule. And I wonder, what's your perspective on this? It seems like a lot of these timelines are lining up and I get very uncomfortable about the direction that things are headed. What is your take on where we're going and how this whole thing might play out?
Well, you're absolutely right. And we've talked about this before on your show. You know, this is a fourth turning, and I'll get into what that is. But, you know, Xi Jinping telling Vladimir Putin in Russia that they are going to be part of the biggest change in the last 100 years. And, you know, what that really is that is the aftermath of World War II. That's 1944. That's Bretton Woods. That's the new economic world order as it was in 1944, with the Axis powers going down and the IMF and the World Bank and all of that being established, gold being pegged to the dollar, $35 an ounce. And that was the world's reserve currency. And all through the Cold War, through the last of the 20th century, up until now, we have been the hegemonic dominant power in the world when it comes to military, when it comes to currency. And those two things go together. We wouldn't be able to dominate the world militarily if we didn't have the world's reserve currency, and vice versa. But the problem is those days are coming to an end. And I don't know, I'm getting the feeling, Charlie, that it's on purpose. I don't know if you ever get the feeling like some of this is actually a conspiracy. No, it's an inside job. But we're also, and the elites know this, and we'll go back to the fourth turning. History is cyclical. There was a couple of historians called Strauss and Howe back in 1995. They wrote a book called The Fourth Turning. And they had traced history back through all its cycles, and especially, you know, going back to around the time of Christ. And what you see is, in most civilizations, most cultures, there is a major change every 70 to 100 years, about the lifespan of a person. And I'll give you an example. If you look at the United States of America, we've had these massive changes about every 70 to 80 years or so in our history. You know, if you have the American Revolution, we have our Civil War. Of course, you have, you know, 80, let's say 7 years later, so on and so forth. You have Lincoln giving that speech at Gettysburg saying, our, you know, 67 years ago. And so, again, that's fast forwarding that. Then you have World War II. That's the next great turning. And again, so we're watching this, and this is 80 years coming up since the end of World War II. And the massive changes happen within those cycles. So about the lifespan of a person, the reason it's called a fourth turning is that there's four turnings inside each major change. So every 20 years or so. I was talking to you last time, I thought, that's pretty crazy that World War I was a third turning. And yeah, it was pretty bad. And that's kind of like what we would consider in this cycle is our war on terror, you know, in the United States, the world to democratize, the war to democratize mankind. So that's what we're experiencing now. I mean, if you reverse engineer history, it has these cycles. And of course, you can kind of narrow that down. There's a real simple way that this has been put out over memes and alternative media and pretty much anywhere now. It's people are starting to pay attention, but you know, it's hard times create strong men create good times create weak men create hard times. That's really what that is boiled down. You know, the elites know this. They have think tanks. They have simulations. They know that history goes in cycles. So I think they're playing this to their advantage. I don't think that the timeline that we're on is necessarily natural, but I think that, I mean, if you look at our culture, Charlie, you know, this isn't real, right? Like the culture, the acid of modernity is always there. I mean, civilizations perish, you know, you have declines and fall, but this is nothing that's natural. This is not organic. It's completely artificial and injected as a psyop. And I'm talking about the decay. It's natural. This is not organic. It's completely artificial and injected as a psyop. And I'm talking about the decay of Western culture. It's everywhere. And you wonder, like, where did that come from? Well, it's funded, right? It's nurtured, and it's put into our society on purpose. So I think this is one of the ways that, yes, we would have major changes. We might have already gotten through them, but I think a lot of these elites and the planners, the overlords, or whatever you want to call them, the bankster class, the people that actually control, like Joe Biden's not in control of the United States of America. No. I don't know. I don't want to shock anyone, but he's not in charge. Right. So I think what you're seeing is a lot of things happening at once. One of the shocking things geopolitically, if you've been paying attention for the last 10, 15 years, is that suddenly China's an enemy, which I've always thought that they were an aggressor. They've had so much influence in our universities, our politics. I mean, they don't need a Chinese spy balloon to find out about us. They just buy our politicians. I mean, Dianne Feinstein's driver was a Chinese spy. I mean, you can Swalwell, that congressman, his girlfriend's a Chinese spy. I mean, so I don't think they need a balloon, Charlie. But you know, they've been, you know, given our trade secrets, our manufacturing. We handed it to them, and the Clintons gave them missile technology, and whatever we didn't give them, the Israelis would give them, you know, by proxy. So they've been built up, and then all of a sudden, now they're an enemy. And the fake right in America is really intellectually exhausting to me. I just can't. It's like, you know, Fox News is an extension of that, and it's just they're right at the edge of being right about something, and then they go off, like, you know, you see Senator Tom Cotton talking about how all of this is China's fault that we're experiencing the U.S. And I'm like, no, the calls are coming from inside the House, and everybody that, you know, knows anything knows that. But they're putting all that on China now. That's alarming. We've got the tensions in Ukraine. We've got the sanctions on Russia really have accelerated the death of the upcoming death of the petrodollar. And we can get into that as well. It's not Putin's price hike. We put the sanctions on us, the American people, by proxy through that. So much tension. Then you have Martin Armstrong is Socrates' AI program saying that the West is going to have to initiate World War III to save the currency? I don't even think that would save it. Honestly, I don't. I think it might buy them some time, but it's. I think the ship has sailed. So we're about to see, and this isn't me being an alarmist. This is just history, folks. Yeah, there's a lot of conspiracy built into it. There's a lot of, there's a lot of artificial. But really, at the end of the day, what we're witnessing is a major shift away from the West to the East, to the BRICS nations, the Brazil, Russia, India, China, South Africa. Saudi Arabia has recently put in an application to become part of the BRICS nations. That is so huge. And the shifts that are happening are so huge. But, you know, you turn on Drudge Report, I'm looking at the headlines right now, and it's about Donald Trump's indictment. That's not news. Is that news? Is that really news in the middle of all this that's happening? I mean, maybe a side blurb, but no, that's the headline. That's what people are paying attention to. But meanwhile, the world's changing, and it's changing quickly.
Yeah, and there's so much happening, and it feels the Trump situation. We just had Billy Ray on. We were talking about that. It feels like a distraction, clearly, away from everything else. As we pivot, you know, I don't know why the talk isn't that Saudi Arabia is considering selling their oil in something other than U.S. dollars. That should it listen, in the George H.W. Bush era, a guy who was a reprehensible scumbag of the highest proportions. But I'll tell you what, that would have never happened under his watch. You know, that would have never. It makes me think that it is engineered, that it is being made to happen, that this is maybe the fourth turning, the end of the American empire. You know, I wrote a book with Jeff Berwick called The Controlled Demolition of the American Empire, that we lay out a case that the empire has been slated for destruction. And one of the things that we said, keep your eye on, is the loss of the petrodollar as the world's reserve currency. And we're getting into situations like that. How close do you think we are to seeing this, the United States dollar depegged from oil?
In my opinion, I don't think it will last the decade, and it will be sooner, I believe, maybe within the next 3 to 5 years. And it could be faster. I mean, you just mentioned something really interesting. This administration, and I think this is one of the key factors of what Hillary Clinton was running on in 2016, was the words managed decline. You would see that pop up every once in a while in some of these journals and things. It's managed decline. You know, the United States is no longer the world's lone superpower. And I thought, well, that's interesting. Why do you say that? You know, you see the commercial from the World Economic Forum that started running about 2016. They're like, imagine a world where the United States is not a lone superpower anymore. And that's how they start off the commercial, that you will own nothing and you'll be happy. I don't know if you remember that. I covered that back in 2019 on my radio show. Well, if you look at some of the previous administrations, and you mentioned George H.W. Bush, George 41, Ronald Reagan, the Saudis were a key in his strategy to bring the Soviet Union to its knees. I mean, that's one of the what he had them, keep the output high for crude, and because that's the number one export for Russia, their major energy state, and at the Soviet Union at the time. And they were working hand in hand with Reagan. And then, of course, the Bushes, you know, the Saudi family, very close. We know all about the bin Laden. I mean, George H.W. Bush was meeting with bin Laden's father, I think, at the Ritz-Carlton Hotel on 9/11, just right down the street from the White House.
On behalf of the Carlyle Group. Yeah, that morning. What are the chances, Tony, that the president of the United States' dad is having a meeting with Osama bin Laden's dad on the morning of September 11th in Washington, D.C.? I mean, what are the chances? I asked the question.
It's just you need to be a coincidence theorist, Charlie. That's what we mean. Yeah, exactly, brother. And this is what's scary. The moves that are being made now are not. And again, you could. There's lots of problems I have. I don't love Ronald Reagan. I don't worship these figures or anything. But these were different people. I mean, you look at Reagan. His goal was to end the Cold War, to put it on the ash heap of history. And, you know, by the end of his presidency, he's walking shoulder to shoulder with Gorbachev in Red Square and they're praying together. I mean, that's huge. I mean, you can't imagine anybody doing anything for peace now. I mean, Joe Biden, this dementia-addled, you know, globalist puppet that we have installed as president of the United States and doing nothing to further our security, our economic security. He got, you know, in a little bit of trouble, so he dumped the strategic reserve of oil.
Yeah.
And instead of opening up drilling or opening up, you know, the XL Keystone Pipeline or anything, It's just temporary measures. It's just buying time. Look at the United States of America. Look at our infrastructure. You know, our water systems. Everything. It's so outdated. It's wearing out. We have been led down this path. We have been swindled. And I think, you know, future historians will look back and say, this is the first time that a great empire was brought down artificially. I mean, every empire ends. Every nation, every country ends, every civilization has a beginning and an end. If you read history, that's what you find. But this is something different. And I think when you compare those things, I mean, you look at, we want tensions. Where's the peace talks? I mean, you know, even Kennedy had a phone that was a back channel communique to Khrushchev during the Cuban Missile Crisis. I mean,
well, the Biden administration has a phone, but it's one of those little toy phones that you give your toddler to play with to pretend like they're a grown up. But we'll get into more of this after the break with our guest, Tony Arterburn. You are listening to TNT Radio.
TNT Radio's Chris Smith.
Well, we're beginning to learn more about the impacts of COVID and all vaccines on the human body, thanks to several embalmers across the world. Now, these funeral directors are now observing many large and abnormal clots inside the corpses they treat and are beginning to speak out, thankfully.
One of the main things for me was very early on in 2020 as a funeral director, I took a phone call, and this would have been about March time, from a guy called John. He said that he worked for a government-sponsored company, and that company, I believe, was called Pandemic Resilience. He started steering me almost immediately, and straight away this guy would insist this guy was COVID. And I kind of said, well, why? You know, I've told you the circumstances. And he said, well, that we've been instructed that one person died from COVID in that facility. And this is a 350-bed facility, you know, it's huge. So he said that we've been instructed to label every person that dies in that facility a COVID death. Yeah, it was a joke.
Chris Smith on TNT Radio.
Let's take advantage of the freedoms that we have while we have them to advance the kingdom's objective, to be salt and light.
Freedom is hard. Election security involves you, involves the voters.
This election for people of faith is vital that we see a change, because the war against Christians is at an all-time high.
Transparency is the key not only to having honest elections, but to maintaining public trust in those elections.
Our ability to vote is not being withheld from us. No one's trying to stop you from voting.
The one place the American people can have a say is at the ballot box. That's why the Democrats and the far left are working so hard to get rid of all election integrity.
We cannot let our elections be anything but transparent. It is at the very heart of freedom in a free society.
And if we lose America, I mean, it's all over, because the world has looked to America for hope.
Free and fair at salemnow.com.
If you can't believe what you're hearing,
get the straight talk from Charlie Robinson on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
We're back with Tony Arterburn, our guest, host of Arterburn Radio Transmission, co-host of America Unplugged. And when David Knight skips out of town, Tony's your host. We love David. It's fantastic. Also, I think it's important that we mention this. You are the owner of Wise Wolf Gold and Silver. So when we talk about monetary policy, when we talk about sound money and hard money, you really understand this. And I'm curious about this direction that we're headed. We're getting into a situation when we had this Ukraine war, when the sanctions came came down on Russia and they cut them out of the SWIFT banking system, and they did all these things to destabilize the Russia and destroy their economy. Russia pivoted. They made an interesting move. They decided that they were going to back their ruble with 5,000 rubles to the gram of gold, if I'm not mistaken. And we watched their currency that was initially pummeled regain its value. I think if you look at the chart, it's almost like a V shape. Could we ever get back to a place where we have sound money, Tony? I mean, does that make too much sense for humanity to get to a place where we actually have money that's backed by something other than just the promise to be invaded by the United States military?
I think it's inevitable. Have you ever looked at the world debt chart from the time of the birth of Christ until now? Have you ever looked at the actual chart? Somebody had done this a couple of years ago. And it's just kind of moving along. You see little bumps. You see the Roman Empire. You see just little tiny bumps. And then you see the Industrial Revolution, just a, you know, a little uptick. And then you see the 20th century, mid-20th century, and right when we went off the gold standard, 1971, giant spike. I mean, just massive amount, trillions and trillions upon trillions of debt in these countries. Every country now, Charlie, the Swiss were the last to go in 2002. They unpegged their currency from silver, and that every other currency on earth right now is a fiat currency since Nixon took us off the gold standard in 1971. So you're talking about unprecedented amount of debt in human history. The money's fake. The governments are fake. The politicians are fake. The news is fake. It all stems from fake currency, right? Because it buys fake things. Now that's coming to an end. One of the blowbacks of the Biden administration, or whatever you want to call them, the sanctions they put on Russia, was really a sanction on ourselves. It just blew back up in our face because they finally had enough, taking them out of the SWIFT systems and so on and so forth. That's what the BRICS nations are all about: Brazil, Russia, India, China, South Africa. And remember that, folks, they're 40% of the world's population. We're 5%. I'm talking about the United States. The United States is 5%. We've dominated the world economically, militarily, for a very long time. That's just where the fourth turning comes in. There's about to be a massive change, a shift in global power. One of the things that Lyndon Johnson always said, and I don't like Lyndon Johnson, but he said something really interesting. He says, power is where power goes. So you figure out what that means. And to me, that means the power is shifting away from the West. It's headed east because that's where everything was shipped to and sent to. You know, you look at the timeline. I bring this up on my show all the time, but you know, the Trilateral Commission was born in 1973. It's also the last year that the United States ran a trade surplus. We built our country. We built the United States on tariffs. We built it on manufacturing, and we gave it all away. We started shifting it eastward, and especially through the end of the Cold War, and then bringing China into the World Trade Organization. 90 days after 9/11, we brought China in as most favored trading nation's trading status. 90 days after 9/11, so again, this has been a shift of wealth and technology away from the West to the East, and all of this really culminating, I think, in the loss of the petrodollar. Now, why is the petrodollar important, and why is the news, you know, talking about the Chinese petro yuan? Why is that so pivotal? Well, it's because the Ponzi scheme of the U.S. dollar, and that's what it is, folks. Since Richard Nixon took us off the gold standard, and again, he didn't really do that; he had no choice. The other nations like France were sending over their warships to pick up their gold and turn their dollars into to gold at the gold window. He shut the gold window. He said it was going to be temporary. And I guess, you know, 52 years on, I guess it kind of still temporary, whatever that means.
Nothing's as permanent as a temporary government measure.
Right. Yes. So exactly. So he did that. And there was massive inflation in the 70s. And if you look at the chart and the price of gold, I mean, gold was $35 an ounce, Charlie. Well, when he took it off the unpegged the dollar. By the end of the 70s, it was near $900 an ounce. And people say, wow, look at that amazing, you know, look how much gold went up in value. It didn't. It stayed. It's pretty much kept its value for the last 100 years plus. It's your currencies, ladies and gentlemen. Your currencies lose value. They don't teach you this in school, right? This would be, if you figured that out, then you would have a different life. I wish somebody would have told me, you know, and I started, like, I have, you know, kids come into this, my gold and silver shop with their parents, and a lot of them are interested in buying silver. I give them this little 2 or 3 minute speech on what money is. And I'm hoping I'm planting those little seeds, you know, because I wish somebody would have told me that. And, you know, I had a entrepreneur father, he owned a bank, you know, all this stuff. He really smart, but we didn't have those conversations. And of course, nothing was this bad, you know, back in the 80s. I mean, we still, you still had some, your purchasing power of your dollar was still somewhat strong. Now we're just completely off the rails. And the rest of the world knows this. 80% of all the printed $100 bills with Benjamin Franklin on them, 80% of all those are not in the United States. They're outside the United States. The reason is because it's the petrodollar. That's why Saddam Hussein had pallets of them. You know, I mean, dictators use them. Regular people use them because it's stable. Well, when people start to figure out it purchases less, you know, we've totally debauched our currency over COVID 1984 and everything else that was built into this psyop that's happened in the last. And then actually a war on the, you know, from the governments of the world against their people. That's what we've seen the last few years. So all of that has made the dollar weaker. It's one of the reasons why Jerome Powell is raising rates, and it's hurting the economy. And people are going, well, but he's got to step in eventually and do quantitative easing. Charlie, I don't know that he is. I think the elites and the Federal Reserve have chosen a stronger dollar to try to keep the reserve status than save the economy, because they can't do both. Because the economy relies on, the U.S. economy relies on cheap fiat injections like a drug addict to be able to sustain itself. So I think we're just, again, this is unprecedented territory. The one thing that'll get you in trouble here when all these shifts happen is normalcy bias.
Yeah. That is true. And we're all guilty of that to a certain extent. Yesterday was pretty normal. Today, pretty normal. Tomorrow will be normal. And you know what? Hopefully it will be. And maybe it will be. But if you're not being honest and objective about the things that you see and the direction that we're headed, you're going to wake up one day and be caught off guard. I think it pays to be a little bit paranoid. You know, Catherine Austin Fitz talked about how she sat in on a meeting in 1997. And she said that when she was assistant deputy housing director or housing secretary in HUD, and she said that they made a decision that they're done with the United States, that the move has been made to China. And she's like, we have? I didn't. Okay. This is a thing. It's a thing. They've made that decision. They've pivoted to Asia, as Obama liked to say, right? The pivot to Asia. And we're starting to see this controlled demolition. And you mentioned something earlier that was funny, that Hillary Clinton was talking about managing the decline. Boy, well, maybe she's not in office. Biden is, or whoever is actually running Biden. I start to look around his administration. And who do I see? I see a bunch of trilaterals. Just like, you know, the Jake Sullivans of the world and Anthony Blinken and Susan Rice and these people that you go, these people are infiltrators. And when you look at the Trilateral Commission, you mentioned starting in 1973, deeply involved with our monetary policy. One of the things that they want desperately is to do away with national sovereignty, the removal of borders. And you say, well, wait a second. What's going on at the southern border of the United States? It seems like our southern flank is wide open, to borrow a military term. And in fact, it is. And you go, well, why won't you guys just stop it? And you look around and you go, well, wait, hang on a second. His whole administration is filled with trilaterals. They don't want borders. Of course, there's no appetite to stop it. This isn't this isn't some sort of flaw. This is a feature of the Biden administration, is it not? Are they trying to destroy us from the inside?
Yes. I mean, and that's both, it spans both parties. This is a run out the clock situation. That's what our politics in the United States are about. not actually fixing anything, just placating the people that know that something's wrong and nothing changes. You're not going to secure the border. That they need population replacement. This is part of the plan. You know what else happened in 1973? Roe v. Wade. You have So right. 73 is a, you know, and whatever you're, and I've listened to your magnificent show on the moon landing, but it, supposedly that was the last year we went to the moon. It was 1973. You know, it's basically the year they said you can't be great anymore. You can't do anything anymore. We're going to run trade deficits now. And also your population is going to be replaced. Just a theory of mine. but I look at, if you take the numbers and you lay them over each other, so the loss of, you know, native born or you know, children that would have been Americans, and it doesn't matter if they're white, brown, black, it doesn't matter. They would have been Americans, right? And if you take that number and then you lay over the top of it, the amount of people we imported from the third world, both legally and illegally, they lay over each other almost perfectly. You tell me that's not a plan. Right. So this is the sophisticated warfare that we're in. That's why when I start, just my eyes roll the back of my head when I see some, you know, some senator stand up. And if we just keep the Chinese accountable and ban TikTok, and I'm like, the Chinese are not taking my country away from me. But Xi Jinping has not hurt me. Vladimir Putin didn't pass the Patriot Act and send me off to the desert to fight on a lie. Okay. So that isn't my enemy. And so the calls are coming from inside the house is what I like to joke about on my show. And that's what we're seeing. Yeah. It's totally a plan, even under the Trump administration, you know, and it's always bothered me. The Trump apologists will say, well, he was surrounded. He couldn't get the funding for the wall. Don't need it. You're the commander in chief. You tell the Pentagon, go build it. It's a paper. It's one sheet of paper with a signature. You know, you have to do this to secure I'm the commander in chief. That was never going to happen. And the Pentagon didn't want to build the wall. Matter of fact, there was a really revealing statement about the border that I read on my show long, you know, before 2020 kicked off and changed everything. But it was the Undersecretary of Defense testifying before Congress. And he asked Congress when they could get back to a traditional role and get away from the U.S. border. So their traditional role is keeping the border safe in wherever a stand, but not in the United States, or guarding the border of South Korea, but not South Texas. Right. This is the mindset of the elite at the upper echelon of every you know, aspect of government is run by the same mindset of people. I think Gore Vidal even said, well, it's not a conspiracy if they all think alike, you know, because they don't even have to talk to each other. So that's where we are. You're 100% correct. We're not supposed to have a border. And this has been, I mean, how do you bring the United States down? How do you stop this, what appears to be like an unstoppable thing back in the 70s and 80s? Well, you do it like this. You do it from the inside.
Yeah, you can't directly attack America. We're bordered on two sides by massive oceans. We've got Canada to the north. They're probably, it's not the best launching point for an invasion. But what if you did it differently? What if you took a more covert approach to it? You destabilized from the inside. You destroyed the infrastructure. You deregulated Wall Street. You deregulated the communications industry so that you could click up these 50 media companies into 5 conglomerates that just own and control and manipulate the news. What if you were to convince people that there's 104 different genders and that you can be cake gender today and two-spirit tomorrow, you know? And what if we got everybody fighting with each other on social media? And what if we destabilized the dollar? And what if we printed into 80% of all dollars in existence over the last 2 years of COVID? I mean, boy, Tony, if I didn't know any better, I'd say that the plot and plans for destabilizing and destroying the American empire were formulated a long time ago with things like NAFTA, the private prison industry. You know, NAFTA was like a 30-year fuse that you light on the country to send out all of the industrial capacity to foreign countries and then watch as the Rust Belt collapses and the blue collar jobs disappear and middle America sort of evaporates. And this is how you would do it. Is it not?
Yeah, you would. You couldn't do it all at once. You got to do it death by a thousand cuts. And you talk about NAFTA, the North American Free Trade Agreement. Sounds good in theory. Oh, we should have free trade. Well, that's not how reality works. It sounds good on paper, but what it is a Darwinian contest that your workers are now thrown into. So you take, the Ford Motor Company or an air conditioning company or whatever. Some even Fruit of the Loom, was one of the people that moved south of the border or away from the U.S. because, you're taxed, you're regulated, you got these unions. Well, instead of those corporations fighting for lower taxes and deregulation and better, a better corporate environment, they say, I'll just move my factory because now I've got this exit strategy and I'll ship the products up free of trade. So I'll cut, free of any fees. And so I'll cut the cost of my labor. I'll cut my taxes. I don't have to worry about environmental anymore. And I'll ship it back up. And then the American consumer, who's now, the government now supplements their income because their factory is now what you talked about, the Rust Belt. It's now rusting, right? So this has gone on and you've taken the soul of the United States away from its. I mean, that's what we built the country on, was making things. We were the arsenal of democracy. I don't like the word democracy, but that's what we were called, that we were the manufacturing marvel of mankind. And it was a miracle. I mean, Henry Ford put the world on wheels. That's America. And then we just took that away and sold it. I mean, we pawned America's soul. The elites did anyway. Perot, when I was a kid, the first paper I ever wrote when I was 12 years old on politics for my sixth grade class. I think at the time my stepmother was like, told my dad, like, why did you write that paper for him? He's like, I didn't. He wrote it. I wrote it about Ross Perot and how he was talking about NAFTA as the giant sucking sound,
Yep.
It was going to be a giant sucking sound. Well, it takes it just took all the jobs and pulled them away from the U.S. And it left us with this hollow shell of this consumer nation where you can get a service job if you're lucky. And of course, not under, if you're non-essential in the Trumpian era and the Faucian era of 2020 and beyond. So that's why we became a consumer nation instead of a producer nation. That has major consequences because now we can't even make the weapons of war that our politicians want to go around beating these war drums. Well, Charlie, because of NAFTA, back in the Gulf War, they tried to source the parts and all the things they need to make Patriot missiles. Remember the Patriot missiles that would take out, the Scuds? Well, one of the senators, I think it was from South Carolina, says it doesn't matter if the United States makes computer chips or paper or potato chips. We can just get it wherever we need. Well, the problem was we couldn't. It did matter whether you made computer chips or potato chips because we had to go to eight different countries to get the parts we needed to make the Patriot missile. And that was back then. So you can't imagine where we are now, where almost nothing is made here. And we outsource everything.
The first person I voted for was Ross Perot. I've only voted for two people, Ross Perot and Ron Paul, and I'll never vote again. Those are my two guys, two crazy Texans. I like you people out there in Texas, I like you lunatics, but this was a destruction, a demoralization. Boy, listen, I know we can measure GDP and we can measure the imports and exports and we can come up with a number for all those things, put a dollar sign on it and say, that's the cost. But how do you quantify the cost of a country losing its soul? How do you measure what happens when a family breaks up because there's just no more jobs, and again, we talk about this at that same era, that Clinton era, the creation of the private prison industry where you monetize freedom. Oh, what a disgusting industry. What a disgusting concept. But we have that. I mean, we're in, Tony, we're in no position to, we're in no moral high ground to lecture the world while we have private prisons, right?
No, we have, I think we're 5% of the world's population, and we have over 25% of the world's prisoners.
Good Lord.
Staggering. I mean, in that, and you can, I mean, you have obviously the communist Chinese, and they just kind of liquidate a lot of people. They don't have, you know, they have prisons, but no, we have, this is where that shifted. Look at the people in Appalachia and other areas. There's the loss of the spirit, losing those jobs, you know, and the coal miners and others that are being phased out. And then you just turn to opiates, you turn to fentanyl because there's no hope. You know, you lose that spirit of being able to be able to provide. I mean, they attack the family. They attack us on a moral level, attack us on a spiritual level, attack us on a psychological. It's everything, and is accelerating as well. You know, it's funny. The reason that Franklin Roosevelt gave that speech when he was inaugurated, I'm not an FDR fan, but, you know, supposedly he got the phrase, the only thing we have to fear is fear itself, from the author Napoleon Hill, who wrote Think and Grow Rich. That's the inside baseball of that speech. But the reason he said that was because there was a feeling that if he didn't run that banking holiday that he was going to run, you know, the day after he was inaugurated, and just said, we're going to have a little break and explain to people, because a lot of times economics, government, society is psychological. Charlie, if you attack the psychological foundations of a country, then what happens is you start to have a paradigm shift. You don't have that confidence anymore. You don't have that. You don't feel like you're at home anymore, and you lose your equilibrium. You lose your way, and that's what's happening.
It's so true. Back with more of Tony Arterburn after the break. This is TNT Radio.
Oh my! Polar bears are disappearing, but only from Al Gore's books and movies. Their numbers are hitting record levels.
From Washington, D.C., this is the Marano Minute with your host, TNT Radio's Mark Marano.
In Al Gore's first film, An Inconvenient Truth, in 2006, he made the polar bear the icon, the poster child of his film, claiming that the polar bear was hanging on to the last ice cube in the Arctic and was soon to go extinct. Fast forward to 2023, and the polar bears are now at or near historic population highs, and Al Gore's sequel? Nary a mention of the polar bear. Polar bear expert Dr. Susan Crockford has says polar bears turned out to be more flexible and resilient than predicted. You gotta hand it to Al Gore. Instead of dealing with the issue head on, he just acted like he never even talked about polar bears in his sequel. This is Mark Marano for the Marano Minute on TNT Radio.
Challenging the consensus and debunking the narrative. This is Viewpoint.
Klaus Schwab has boasted of penetrating government cabinets around the world. He claimed in one interview that more than half of Justin Trudeau's Canadian cabinet are young global leaders of the World Economic Forum. If freedom prevails, the peoples of all nations will reject Klaus Schwab's fourth industrial revolution of surveillance and control, and biotechnologies designed to change what it means to be human. We don't have to walk muzzled and compliant straight into a transhumanist hell. As Klaus Schwab himself admits, the new technologies of the fourth industrial revolution could intrude into the hitherto private space of our minds, reading our thoughts and influencing our behavior.
What a crazy time to be alive.
Charlie Robinson on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Back for a final segment with our guest, Tony Arterburn, host of the Arterburn Radio Transmission, co-host of America Unplugged with Billy Ray Valentine and Don Jeffries. We were talking about the destabilization of the dollar, the destabilization of the petrodollar, the crumbling of the manufacturing capacity of America through NAFTA and the like, the outsourcing of our intellectual property to places like China and Israel. We come to the final nail in the coffin, and I wonder if ESG is going to be the thing that finally destroys the American empire, the American economic empire. We've watched the environmental, social, and governance component, this woke ideology, infect boardrooms of all places. Now, I can understand, I mean, I don't love it, of course, but I can understand the universities. We've watched them turn into indoctrination camps, and it's to be expected, I guess, maybe on some level. But I would have never thought that the white collar criminals running major American organizations would ever give a damn about how many one-legged, blue-haired Eskimo midgets they hire on their board of directors in order to check off some box and to qualify. What do you think about this direction that we're headed, where the woke infusion into the corporate space? This seems like a mismatch to me. I know BlackRock is driving a lot of this. I've seen Vanguard recently pull away. Is this a sustainable business model?
It's an extension of 1913 by other means. I think that's what you're watching. We all know what happened after 1913. You had the entrance of the United States, the world first, and Europe first, and then the United States into World War One, which was a banker's war, a total manufactured, conjured up to remake the globe and reset royal families and all of that and transfer debts, right? So we watched that happen. But something interesting happened at the end of that war, Charlie. The world's richest people, the Warburgs, the Rothschilds, Kuhn Loeb, Morgans, and others funded communism. This is conspiracy 101. You know, you go back to Gary Allen's work, None Dare Call It Conspiracy. This is the exposing of the lie that communism is organic, that it springs out of nothing, that it's of course it's a, you know, it's an ideology, but it's one that is well taken care of. It's funded, it's nurtured. And that's what's happened. That's what happened in the 20th century. That's what made communism possible. It's what made the Soviet Union possible. 1949, you had Mao being funded by the mega banks and the Rothschilds and the Rockefellers. They loved that top-down system, so that was part of their plan as well. ESG is just it's transitioning into the old way of just, you know, giving boxcars full of gold loaded down with Vladimir Lenin, sending him into Russia. This is just the new trans version of that. It's transitioning into a nicer face.
They put the trans in transferring wealth, huh?
That's exactly right. I was just thinking of, like, how do I put this without getting you in trouble, you know, or getting one of us in trouble is hate.
Oh, nobody's listening. We don't care. It's all right.
Well, it's funny because, people think, well, this is weird. Why would these big mega banks like BlackRock and these multinationals, why would they abandon profit for environmental social governance? Well, they've always abandoned profit for control. That's what this is all about. It's control of society. It's the implementation of Marxism. Because let's Bill Cooper had the phrase, you know, one world totalitarian socialist government, you know, that's Bill Cooper. Yeah, it's one world totalitarian socialist government. And it's not that the socialists brought you that government. It's the world's richest people. It's the same game, just dressed up differently.
It certainly is. And I think the socialist component throws people for a loop because they don't expect it. They expect the authoritarian government. You know, they expect that. But what they can't wrap their minds around is that when you're in a industry or a system that runs on fake money, the money that you can print whenever you want, if you run the Feds and you run the Bank for International Settlements and the IMF and all these groups, money is nothing to them. It's imaginary. But control is real. So they'll trade fake money for real control any day of the week, right?
Right. Absolutely. And that's what it's all about. People say, well, you go woke, you go broke. Right. But is that really true?
Well, I don't know. I mean, not if you're BlackRock. I mean, you get to make the rules at this point.
That's what I'm saying.
Now.
Well, that's what I ask people to ask them all the time. It's a kind of rhetorical question. Is it true if you go woke, you go broke? Because they don't ever go broke. I mean, the reason that that this is happening, the reason that they'll trade profit, they're trading profit for influence and power. And right now, it's not your father's stock market. You know, this isn't what our grandfathers built, where you had to have a balance sheet and you had to make a profit. Look at all these companies that don't make a profit every year. Look at these mega companies that don't make, especially in the tech industry. What a lot of them have in common is their ties to the central bank. Are you going to get injected with cash when times get hard? Are you going to get Daddy Jerome Powell's going to give you your fix? Well, that's what it's all about now. It's ties to the central bank. And what was the fifth plank of the Communist Manifesto, Charlie? Central bank, right? None of these things, nothing new under the sun here, which is more sophisticated. And you'll see, like, they don't quite get it on Fox News. You know, they'll be talking about, well, why are these companies, they're going woke, they're going to go broke. Well, they never seem to, because they've been saying that for years now, and the companies just keep marching on. It's because they have ties, especially with BlackRock and Vanguard and all these others that have all these giant retirement packages. And let's not, you know, forget that Trump put BlackRock in a major role with the Federal Reserve Bank.
Yes.
This is, again, there's so much connectivity here, but it's not one dimensional. It's multidimensional. And that's therein lies the rub, you know, where you look at the influence that these the money manipulators have and how they've been able to set up this system where we're just being engulfed in a tidal wave of Marxism, cultural Marxism, economic Marxism. You know, my argument too has been because you'll hear the left say this all the time. They say, well, this country's controlled by the rich. And I said, you got it right. And they said, well, we got to increase these taxes. And I said, well, you just destroyed your own logic, because if the taxes were hurting the world's richest people that control this country, there wouldn't be any. But they love it. They love those taxes. They love those regulations. That's what ESG is all about. ESG is not making the world safer or more environmentally friendly or have equity. It's to make sure that no one ever competes with them ever again. Right.
Please don't throw me in the briar patch and regulate me exactly the way that I want to be regulated, Daddy Government. Please, whatever you do. I mean, we saw an example of this with the FTX situation, where they've been lobbying Congress and buying politicians like crazy. For what? For no regulation? No. For regulation. But they wanted to be the ones driving the bus on how that regulation was going to look. And if they gave the money, the regulation works two ways. I mean, it keeps competitors out. And I think they recognize that. And that's the plan behind it.
Yeah, that's exactly right. It's no competition. What did John D. Rockefeller say? Competition's
a sin.
It's a sin, right? No, that's where we are. I mean, it's just the same game, just dressed up differently. But that's part of this too. They're playing a different game than we are. You know, that we're just trying to keep food on the table, keep the bills paid, take care of our families. We got to keep our heads down a lot of times because we have to work. And then you have these think tank weirdos and degenerates and people part of the moneyed class, that's the upper echelon. They're running a different scheme, totally different. What did Thomas Jefferson talk about? He says, merchants have no country. You know, they don't have a country. So this is something that we're going to have to deal with in the West, is that, the people that have the most control have no loyalty to us or our government or our system or our way of life. That's a fact. They're looking out for themselves and where they're going to land next. The World Economic Forum has a lot more influence on your daily life than your congressman does, because your congressman's probably a member of the World Economic Forum. So
I've got an episode of Macroaggressions coming out pretty soon where I have the young global leader list and I just go to town on those people.
Oh, I can't wait for that one. I can't wait. Go find Dan Crenshaw on there and let him know.
Oh yeah, the one eye McCain, he's on there. Believe me. Yes. Ben Tulsi's on there too. There's a lot of people. There's a lot of people that are in these positions of power, and you want to like them, you know. You go, God, they're saying the right things, and then you find them on this list of scumbags, and you go, okay, that's an automatic disqualification for me. We're in an information. Say what you want about Alex Jones, but when he said we're in an information war, he wasn't wrong. that the idea that there's this control of the flow of information, it impacts how we think, how we perceive the world. And of course, that means that it impacts the decisions that we make, the ways we vote, the ways we vote with our money, all of those great things. Tony Arterburn has been our guest. Tony, where's the best place for people to find you, check out your work, and support what you're doing?
Sure. You can go to my website. It's my last name, .news. Arterburn.news is my website. You can find most of my shows up there. Or wisewolf.gold. Learn about Wise Wolf Gold and Silver and what we do.
Get yourself educated about gold and silver. You're going to need it. You're going to need it when this fourth turning kicks off. Thanks to Billy Ray Valentine for starting off this show, starting off this whole entire show. So we appreciate it. If you want to connect with me, the website is theoctopusofglobalcontrol.com. You can follow me on Twitter at macroaggressions. I write books. Go to Amazon. Look for Charlie Robinson. You can support me by buying books. Thanks, everybody.